Let's go to Hebrews 5. Almost all of you in this room have been what would nominally be called believers for more than 3 years. In ancient times, now you should all be teaching.
Ancient time,
first century church. First century church. The process was of, and when they weren't in that position, then Paul chewed them out. Let's look at chapter 5 and see what's going on. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins, who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, for that he himself also is surrounded or compassed with infirmity or weakness. And by reason hereof he ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins. And no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So also Christ glorified not himself to be made a high priest. But he that said unto him, Thou art my son, today have I begotten thee. As he saith also in another place, Thou art a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared. Though he were a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. And then Paul goes on to say this wild stuff. He says, Of whom we have many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing you are dull of hearing. For when for the time you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God. And it becomes such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. Now the sensory exercising that it's talking about is, it's really not good and evil as we know it. It means to discern soul from spirit. Paul calls all things that are after the soul evil and all things that are after the spirit good. So the discernment between soul and spirit is having your senses exercised in that. But he's talking about this guy, and he wants to talk about him, and he wants to tell him about who Melchizedek is and what Melchizedek does, but he says he can't talk about it because their ears were dull of hearing. Then he goes on and he says, Therefore, leaving the principles of the doctrine of Christ, let us go on unto perfection. That's a pretty big statement. Leaving the principles of the doctrine of Christ, let us go on unto perfection. I remember when I first read that, I thought, my God, what in the hell does that mean? Yeah. Not laying again the foundation of repentance from dead works, and of faith toward God, and of the doctrine of baptisms, and of the laying on of hands, and of the resurrection of the dead, and eternal judgment. And this we will do, if God permit. Well, when we began to go into the offerings, we leave behind the first principles of the doctrine of Christ. Amen? Okay, let's go back to Leviticus. There are at least 40 references in the New Testament about the book of Leviticus being typical. The book of Genesis shows us broad general pictures of the work of Christ. We saw, the offering of Cain versus Abel, whether it's in the Tower of Babel, whether it's in the flood, there's picture after picture after picture of our life in Christ, just sort of snapshots, and as opposed to the life in the world. The book of Exodus shows us Christ in his work of redemption. He's redeeming us from the world, pulling us out of the world, beginning the process of sanctification, beginning to form a people. But it's still in this state of being where it's up. I mean, you individually coming to here with the book of Genesis. Now, as a body, thus far, we've been the book of Exodus, where the things connected with leaving the world and the plagues and all that stuff. But now, it's all of that was Christ. Every element, every aspect, an infinite number of photographs or pictures of him and his completed work. But it still was, how can I say this? It still was God over here somewhere and us over here. In Genesis, it was you over there. In Exodus, it's us over there. But it's still God here and us there. You got it?
I had that feeling too.
You got that? That feeling? Well, the book of Leviticus is the book that defines and creates access to God. Instantaneous access. So that there is never again a feeling of being separate from something. It's culminated in the burnt offering. When you see that the burnt offering is made at the proper place and you've made it at the proper place, the right burnt offering to the right place, then again, you can never again be separate. So, and again, it's not something that you have to do. It's simply apprehending by the renewal of your mind what has already been finished by Jesus Christ.
Sounds easy.
It is. It's more easy than you can ever dream about. But it's the book of Leviticus is the access book. It's the keys to the kingdom. It's the key to enter the door. You got it? Even if you're in the wilderness, you still have the door to enter into the mercy seat. Because remember, the tabernacle was built in the wilderness. And in the tabernacle were all of the fullness of God, dwelt bodily in the tabernacle, even though they weren't in any place. So that's where we are. We are a people now. We've been a little retarded. But we're a people that's been pulled out of the world, separated unto God. Now, we want to see the fullness of God. Okay? Leviticus shows us Christ. Christ the priest, Christ the offerer, Christ the offering, and Christ the Father. I mean, he is everything. And as we see that, then we sort of just lose consciousness of ourselves. It's always parables. That's why, because the thing, it's always, the things of God are always hid from the world. Now, in the book of Numbers, which we'll get into next, it's the history of Israel in the wilderness. What we can expect after leaving the world with regard to the services, the trials, the failures. The world is viewed not as a place of self-realization, but as a place of failure. It's no longer seen as a house of bondage, but simply a place of the trial. You understand? this thing, it's like in the past, do you understand how important this is? Your world has been peopled and populated and created as an instrument of your self-realization. You are the subject of your sentences. You are the subject of the failures of your sentences. And so you looked at the world as a house of bondage, as a place of the world. I mean, you understand, we're not going to be like the desert fathers and go out into the and live in hermit. I mean, as a hermit in the deserts, or even as a go out in a monastery and live. No matter how much you think you'd like to do that, we are going to be in the world. What will change is not the physical structure of the world, because all things continue as they were from the very beginning. But how you see the world will change. And it's important that you hear this. Now, this world then is just the scene that we must pass through. And we must pass through it. You can't jump over it. You have to go through it. It's just the scene of the pilgrimage. Now let's go and see what Paul says about this trek. 1 Corinthians 10. Read the first 14 verses here.
Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all.
Wait a minute, let's go that one again. I like that one. I would not that you should be ignorant.
Hey, you idiot.
Or, don't be stupid, you guys.
I would not that you should be ignorant.
It sounds nice when he said it.
Attention, and bone-headed brethren.
Okay.
How that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized under Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted.
Now, again, the example there is not that's a weak, weak word. It's more, right, there's no word for it in English. There's German words for it, but it means the model itself with its own power. I mean, it means if you understand what happened as an example, these things were our examples, then it will be impossible for you to lust after the evil. It's not a should do. Do you understand? It's if you have eaten it, if you have eaten that same spiritual food, then this lust is after evil is impossible. Do you hear me? Okay, go ahead.
Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry.
Okay. In the book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers, what you're seeing is really Levites. That's when you really look at it, that's about all it talks about is Levites. There's not a great deal of talk about the individual people that were in the nation of Israel. It talks about either priests or Levites. And you see yourself now as the Levite who is bearing the ark. Do you understand? So you're bearing the ark, the movable ark, through the wilderness until you reach the impenetrable or the immovable New Jerusalem. It's always there, but your mind doesn't know it. So you have to see yourself as bearing the ark. In Exodus, in Genesis, you couldn't see yourself as doing anything. I mean, you were consumed with self-realization. In Exodus, you see yourself being removed from the world. Now in Leviticus, you begin to see yourself as the Levite who is bearing the ark and has full responsibility for the ark. I mean, if remember that stupid movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. If you could hear and know with the same intensity that movie was made, that the ark, where it's hidden, is in you. And all the power that's in that ark and more is in you tonight. And you are the bearer of that sacred ark. Well, that's what really the book of Numbers is about, is you bearing that ark. Okay? You understand that?
Well, this is like the thing of if we were the last person on earth to believe this.
Amen. You'd still be it. Again, mankind hates the wilderness. That's why if ever man is in the wilderness, he does everything he can to get out of it. Because in the wilderness is a land in which there are no options. Freedom of choice is a luxury that is meaningless in the wilderness. Some of you, we're all in the wilderness. You think you still have freedom of choice, but you really don't. You still think there are choices that you can make, but they're not. The only time that you get desperate and weird is when you fall into an arena where you believe there are choices. Now, our guidance in the wilderness is the cloud, the pillar of fire in the day and the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. A decision is impossible in the wilderness because you just follow the fire or follow the cloud. It's simplicity beyond simplicity if you're not in a state of rebellion. If you're in a state of rebellion, it'll be impossible. You will die spiritually in the wilderness. That's why the wilderness exists, to purge the rebels. God could have just taken Israel and bounced them from... They could have jumped right over the wilderness. Put them on a boat. Well... the biggest thing that we see in Numbers, besides this thing that's going on, is the provision, the strong provisions when we fail. And that's the real thing. The book of Numbers proves that we're going to fail time after time after time, but it will also show us the strong provisions. We'll see the murmuring after flesh pots, unbelief with regard to going to the promise, the need for water and food, and then its supply. We'll see their whoredoms. We'll see their discouragements. We'll see living pictures as we study Numbers of what our life in the wilderness is today. And that's why we study it. not as a history, but as a present. Now, Deuteronomy means second law. It's a reflection or a repetition of the law. So nations encamped at the plains of Moab, ready to enter the promise, and Moses warns the new generation to maintain the covenant, to profit by the experience of the fathers. And Joshua, the book of Joshua, is the promise, a divinely appointed successor to Moses. Jesus, divinely appointed, succeeds or comes after the law. It's now showing our way in the promise, showing us in type we are already seated with Christ in the heavenly places. The book of Joshua, as we've talked about, answers very nearly to the book of Ephesians. In both, we see the elect standing in the place of the promise, but they still find it a place of conflict. But they no longer wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and powers in the high places. Well, that's a few of the things that we're about. Let's begin the trek of the offerings. All of the offerings have a lot of commonality. In each of the offerings, there are at least three distinct objects. There's an offerer, an offering, and a priest. Why do you need priests? What are priests? Fundamentally, you need a priest is simply another picture. Why do you need Levites? They're another picture. Do you believe in the priesthood of all believers? Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
That you say what you see and say what you know.
That the only real purpose is to be
served.
Is to be that conduit thing, the mediator, or just a vessel that makes it possible for this other person to have access. There's no other reason. Be it in whatever form. Buy a dinner or talking to somebody.
What does that mean? What does a cover mean?
No, I thought that's what you just described.
A priest's purpose is to provide covering. But what does it mean? What is a cover? Is it a place you go to get ruled? That's what most people think a covering is. A covering is only a place that you run to in time of trouble. But most people resent coverings. They really hate them.
Well, when they got in trouble, they do.
They hate the covering. Why do you hate the covering? And it's the real evidence of your right. It's the proof of your own lack of divinity.
Probably the worst. No, that's the worst aspect, probably.
Christ is the offering. Christ is the priest. Christ is the offerer. As the offerer, he comes as a man under the law, in need of something, standing as our substitute, presenting something to God to satisfy God's demands. This is going to be hard to think about because most of us don't believe that, bottom line is most of us don't believe in God. But the evidence we don't believe in God is we don't believe God has any just demands on us. Do you understand that?
That's not always true.
Oh, no, it's not.
A lot.
But you really don't believe that God has a just demand on you. If you did, your life would be totally different. It'd be without murmuring.
Yeah, all you would see is mercy. You'd never see.
You'd never see your own rights. It would be impossible. You'd never see your own position. It would be impossible.
It's what dwelling in the position that you're the chief of sinners all the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, as the offerer then, he comes as a man under the law. He comes as you to the altar. He took the body prepared for him as his offering, that in it and by it he might reconcile us to God. Now, what body did God prepare for him?
Two. In particular, the one that he actually lived in and walked and talked in for 30 years. And in other than particular, the bride. Which I don't really understand, but the first part of it is.
Though he were a son, yet he learned obedience by the things that he suffered. From the time of, I don't know about what happened from the time of his birth until he was 13, but I do know from the time he was 13 until the time of his crucifixion that he never once acted on his own understanding. He trusted the Father to prepare a body for him. That kind of trust is awesome. Stop and think of it, that if you never took your own life back into your own hands, your own concern back into your concern, but in every test you gave over total control to the Father, saying, "This I understand and I accept as your will this instant, Father." That's what he did. He never left that position. Now, we think it's a miracle if we ever get into that position once. He never left it. Now, I pray that you will see by the book of Leviticus that that position of never leaving, never leaning on your own arm of understanding, never leaving that moment of dependence, is the position that you have to be in for the rest of your life. And to always trust that impulse, whatever it is, it's always God. 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 It never is something less than God. It never is something that needs to be analyzed. It never is something that needs to be debated with. It's always God. It's always God. It's always God. Never, ever taking it back and looking at it and analyzing it. Never bringing it back to self in any ways. That's what the bottom line is from the book of Leviticus. Now, in Psalm 40 he said, "Then said he, Lo, I come, in the volume of the book it is written of me, I delight to do thy will, O God, yea, thy law is written in my heart." The scriptures declare that all of this law is written in our hearts now. but we don't believe it. We always have to take whatever step comes or whatever the next impulse is, we always take it and we analyze it, we move it around, we debate with it, we contend with it, we gainsay it. We are always in a place of opposition. You might say, well, all things are of God. That's what they tried in this little thing we just went through. And I say, yes, all things are of God. In the same way that gold is assayed. All, the acid is of God to get the pure gold tested. But the acid goes to Gehenna and the pure gold goes to heaven. All things are of God. There must needs be offenses, but woe unto him by whom the offense cometh. You understand that?
I understand that, but there's something I don't understand. And that is how he did that. I mean, I've heard you say over and over and over, we're in exactly the same position. I'm in exactly the same position he was in. There's no difference. And I cannot fathom how the guy did that, how he remembered that, how he didn't screw up, how he didn't get off the track. I believe that he did that, but I can't for the life of me imagine how he did it.
Because he never had the propensity to analyze it.
Well, then, but if that's true, then it's not true that we're in the same position.
You're in the same... But he didn't have the propensity to analyze it after his 13th birthday. The things that you are doing now were done by him before he was 13.
That's comforting. By rights, none of us should have driver's licenses.
So then there were, I mean, there's something that, there's a seeing that he came to at that age that I have not yet come to.
That's right.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
Well, this is something I've been debating, and it's still, I've been trying to make it go away, but it's still making me nervous. It's that, and I just noticed it last Tuesday night, it's that we skip the four Gospels a lot. You know, we go to Isaiah, and then we go to Hebrews, we go to Revelation, and we go to Numbers, and it makes me nervous. It's like we talk about Christ, but it's never what he actually said. It's always, not always. It's not like we always skip it, but...
Let me clarify something. We are a people, and I am a teacher who teaches that Christ is everything from Genesis to Revelation, that he is specifically revealed more than in any place else in the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, the Torah. And those five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, show the fullness of everything that's necessary. And by the understanding of those five books, the mind would be renewed and you would be seated on the mercy seat.